Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Friday afternoon, April 16th, 2010. It is now 3:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our Constitution will we start taking it back. This program is just about that. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us today on our special broadcast of Liberty Talk Radio. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620, 646-652-4620. We have five open lines. This is a special broadcast, and we are broadcasting for the first time in some time. And this is very interesting because by doing so, we are testing all our equipment out, and we do hope everything is working properly. We do already have a caller. Let's see who's on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, please, and where you're calling from. Caller, you're on the air. Hello? Caller, you're on the air. That's area code 918-378. You're on the air. Can you hear me? We do have a connect problem. Oh, I hope we're not going to have a problem all the way through our program. Caller, can you read me? Okay, I guess we have a bad connection. All right, we'll continue our program.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, how are you?
Hi, this is Sarah.
Sarah.
I'm sorry about the connection. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Was that on your end or our end?
That was on my end.
Oh, okay. I'm glad to hear that because we've had so many problems. I said, well, geez, here we have a start of a program and we have our first call in and we have a problem. So it makes me feel so much better.
No,
I'm glad it's your problem and not mine. Sorry to tell you that. Sarah, what can I do for you today?
I had a question. It has to do with jobs staying in the United States.
Right.
And I was hoping you would talk about this today, but it has to do with, you know, how if we bring more jobs to the United States that we've already sent overseas, then how are people going to be able to afford the products that are made when they're going to be so much more expensive?
Okay.
They might have jobs, but it's going to be everything's going to be a whole lot more expensive.
You know, the famous economist Hayek said we have to look at not only what is seen, but what is not seen. What is seen, for example, in this case, are jobs being brought back to America or being reestablished here in America. Now, that's being seen, so everyone applauds that and say, well, geez, look at the great job someone's doing, usually someone in the federal government, is doing to bring jobs back here. And we applaud that because now more people are working. But then we have to see what is not seen. And this is exactly what we're going to talk about. And please feel free to interrupt me, ask questions, or please disagree if you do. But in that case, we do have jobs coming back. Now, and I'll give you an example. About 3 years ago, I was in Office Depot, and I was not looking for a printer, but I really wanted a good laser printer, but heretofore could not afford one because they were kind of pricey. They were like $400-$500, and this was from home, and I just couldn't justify spending $200-$300 for a laser printer. And I passed by, and there was a Samsung. In fact, I have it right here. It's an LM2010. And it had a price of, I think, $89 or $99. And I said, geez, that looks like an awfully nice printer. I know Samsung is, in fact, your doggy's barking, by the way. That's fine. Samsung is a very, very good name. And so I asked the salesman, I said, is this correct? Does this $99 price refer to the Samsung? He said, yes, it does. I said, well, how come so cheap? I said, Samsung's a good product. He said, it is. He says, it's an excellent printer. Now, I've had that printer for 3 years. Now, the only time I've had maybe a few paper jams, mostly my fault. Other than that, it's been faultless. Now, I bought it because it was $99.95. Now, had I had a coupon at the time, which I should have had a coupon for, you know, you get $20 off for anything over $75 or something like that, I would have gotten it for even less. Had that printer been made in the United States, it would have been at least double the price. The question is, would I, in fact, have purchased that printer? Well, in my case, oh, I see Sarah hung up because her dog was barking. Okay, Sarah, I hope you're listening. But in my case, I would not have purchased that printer. So I would have done without, stayed with my, not laser printer, but inkjet printer that I hated, what was so slow and very expensive to run, and just didn't print anything out. I mean, very rarely, because it took a long time and the cartridges were so expensive. So what happened when I purchased that printer from overseas? Well, I got something that I really wanted and that I felt that I could afford. Now, don't get me wrong. You say, well, Joe, you could have afforded one for $200, $300. You're not that broke. And that's true. But then, you see, that's what is seen. What is not seen is the amount of the, if I would have paid $299 or $199, whatever the amount would have been, that meant, that's what's seen, right? That I spent the $200 and I supported someone's job. At that point, oh, I think Sarah's back again. Let me see if I can get it back in the line. Sarah, are you there again?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay, very good.
Yes.
I was just saying that if I purchased it and it was made in the United States, you know, I could have afforded it, but that wasn't the point. That meant I paid, let's say, $199 or $299 instead of the $99. In other words, more money, whatever the price is. It makes no difference what it is. But that is what is seen. They say, well, see, Joe, you could have afforded the $199, and that would have preserved the job in the United States. So, see, that proves you're wrong. But that means that would have been less money in my pocket, whatever it is, $50, $100, $200 less, which meant that I would have not purchased something that I would have had I had that money, which would have created a job someplace else. So we keep on looking what is seen, in other words, just the purchase, and saying, well, since you bought it here and it's made in America, we created a job. Well, not necessarily so. But even if I did purchase the American printer for $100 more, remember, I'm $100 more out of pocket. That means when I go someplace else and I say, well, geez, I want to buy, and you name it, you fill in the blank, I want to buy this, and I look at my wallet and I go, geez, I don't have any more money. I just spent it on a printer. What happened to the job of the person in America that was made the thing that I wanted to buy with the other $100? He's out of luck. So we, in fact, impoverish America by buying things at prices above whatever the competition allows. I mean, it's economics 101. But just because it's made overseas, we feel that, well, geez, you know, we got to bring our jobs back, so we won't buy Samsung. We'll just have Hewlett-Packard printers or whatever the case may be. But what's also not seen in that case, look at the jobs that were created. Because we brought it in from overseas, there had to be a company here in the United States that contracted with them. They had to employ people. There had to be people on the dock, you know, who unloaded the stuff, they were longshoremen and whatever. Then they had to be truckers who trucked the printer from the shop, you know, to the warehouse. Then there's warehousemen. There are American jobs that are created because I bought a foreign printer. And that's what is unseen. Now, if I decide, well, no, it's $199 or $299, it's too much money and I don't buy the printer, regardless of where it's made, nothing happens. So what they call the velocity, the velocity of money stops. And during the Depression in the 1930s, What killed the economy? The velocity of money. People got money. They didn't spend it because they didn't want to let loose of it. There was very little around. So money, the exchange of money stopped. And if you stopped, if you reduce the velocity of money, you create economic hardship. Now, this is what the politicians don't want you to know. They just want you to know that they're all American and you know, they got all these things they're going to say. And it all sounds good. But all they are addressing is what is seen, not what is unseen. Now, the unfortunate part is, will Americans, the average American, sit down and literally listen to the logic of all this? No, of course not. They just know, damn it, they're Americans, and, you know, those people, you know, forget about those foreigners. We got to protect America. That's all they want to know. They don't want to listen to anything beyond that. But in fact, we kill jobs by not buying overseas. And that's an example. But now you can replicate that literally millions of times a day. Millions of times a day. And you can see what can happen to our economy. If everything was made here, but no one could afford it, what good is it? What do you think of that?
Okay, I see that. That's a good point. Thank you.
Okay. You have any other questions or any comments you'd like to make? Because you're on the air. Sarah, are you still there? Sarah?
Oh, yes, I'm still here.
You have any comments that you'd like to make?
Well, with a lot of people that are now unemployed, and then maybe they can buy things that are cheaper, but how are they going to come up with the money to buy the cheap products? So, I mean, there's both ways to look at it, too.
Absolutely. So what those people need to, and absolutely, that's the other side of the coin. That's not the unseen, but that's the other side of the coin. The other side of the coin is we need to produce things that we produce very well. For example, we may be in the in a business not transportable overseas, or a service that we can provide here that brings in good income. Let me give you a macroeconomic point of view of this. Look at our farming. What do we do with our farming? We waste it. We make biofuels with it. Instead of making, which is a losing proposition, and the government really knows it, and it's costing us billions of dollars a year. But let's say we took the corn that we are now consuming just to make biofuels, which costs more money than regular gasoline and creates just as much pollution. Let's say we took that corn, and instead of giving it away because we're benevolent and we're going to give it to it, that we sold it to other countries. And most countries need our food stuff. We would have something to export. Now, when you export, it's not only the farmer, it's the trucker, the packager. There are thousands of people involved in just exporting a good. So we have goods here that we can export, provided we don't give them away. So, you know, I mean, we could extrapolate that to everything and anything. Now, there are companies who have proven that we can, in fact, make things here in America as inexpensively as those made overseas. Remember, our advantage is that we don't have to order it 6 months in advance. Let me give you an example. There are goods that are seasonal, and sometimes fashions or consumer preferences change very quickly. Well, when a consumer preference changes quickly, you can't go to China and say, oh, by the way, we'd like you to make this. You have to plan a year or 2 years in advance. Well, by the time you have it made in China and brought over here, consumer preferences have changed again. I'll give you an example. Many, many years ago, I'm talking 100 years ago, not 100, but about 40 years ago, my father used to be in the glove manufacturing business. Now, gloves were not made here in America anymore. They were made, first of all, they went to the Philippines, then they went to Taiwan, then they went to China, etc. However, now people don't wear gloves today, women's gloves, that is. They don't wear that, so that industry is dead. But what my father did do is he capitalized on the seasonality and on the latest trend. So when a company like Kaiser Roth, big company that sold all sorts of goods to department stores, needed a special glove that was a special color with a special design, They couldn't go to China. They went to my father and said, could you make this? And my father, within a couple of weeks, could make that glove. So you see, my father actually had a competitive business in an industry where he was totally uncompetitive.
Oh, wow.
That's Isn't that
great.
Interesting?
Yeah. I get what you're saying. Yeah. Yes, very interesting.
It's really fascinating. In fact, he did pretty well. In fact, at one time, when we lived in Harlem, he employed over 200 people, a factory on First Avenue and 123rd Street. Right there in the middle of it, he had a factory. Over 200 people were working there, and they all made very good money. All making gloves that could not be imported from Japan, the Philippines, China, Taiwan, or wherever, because it would take a year to a year and a half where my father can turn it over in a couple of months. Fascinating. But there's always a niche. So we don't have to produce the shoe. We can produce maybe the most fashionable shoe or whatever the case may be. There is always a cup. When I worked as a door-to-door salesman for Cutco Knives, I worked for this guy. His name was Lenny Shapiro. This guy said, I don't know if he ever made it, but he says, someday, he says, I want to be president of Alcoa. It was a division of Alcoa. Now, this was raw knocking on doors type thing. You know, cold calling, knocking on doors, selling knives door to door. Horrible job, by the way. I don't recommend it for anyone. However, he did say one thing that always stayed with me and stayed with me in all the businesses that I've been in and had made me persist because I kept on thinking of this. He says, Joe, no matter how much competition you have, you never run out of customers. Just think about that. You never, ever run out of customers. That means that if you have people, China, flooding the market with stuff, you always have a customer. The angle may be different. It may be slightly different. It may be you may perform some sort of service that cannot be performed by somebody in China or Taiwan or in Germany or whatever. But there's something that you can do where you establish a niche. And so it's always available to you. You know, we're very ingenious people here in the United States when it comes to business. And just because China makes cheap running shoes doesn't mean that we should lie down and die. And this is the problem that we have. I hope I've answered your question. Do you have any more comments or questions for us?
Yes. Well, I love that story about your dad.
It's a true story.
That is so good. It really shows the point. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for calling, Sarah. Appreciate it very much. Thank you for listening to Liberty Talk Radio.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye now. Yep. We're a little discombobulated because we got a call right in the very beginning of our program. I want to go back to the reason why our jobs are overseas. Our jobs are overseas for a very good reason. You see, after World War II, we had a situation where there were no industrialized countries to speak of. I mean, there were a few, but they were very limited. They were antiquated, etc. There was only one industrial powerhouse. And guess who that was, folks? Yes, it was us. You know? It was us. And here we are. Oh, by the way, this is Liberty Talk Radio. My name is Joe Cristiano. Please call in 646-652-4620. 646-652-4620. Appreciate your calls. Anytime your comments, go to comments@libertytalkradio.com. I always will get back to you. I'll even make a program on any subject that you feel deserves comment. Okay? comments@libertytalkradio.com. 646-652-4620. Now, where was I? Oh, what after World War II? So we made products that were quite expensive. You know, remember the old, for you old people like me, planned obsolescence. We made stuff so crappy, it was guaranteed to die within a year. I remember everything we bought, everything. You bought it, it ran. After a year, it died. Or within a year, right after the guarantee was up, it died. I mean, everything was made like crap. It looked good, but didn't really last very long. You know why? Because there was no competition. Then Japan came in, and then we went to Japan. Actually, we went to Japan and showed Japan how to make quality products. We wouldn't do it here because we wouldn't do it. We wouldn't follow the process here called Deming, the Deming way of doing things, of production. Deming went there, got the ears, eyes and ears and whatever, and the hearts and soul of all the high industrialists. They decided to do it the Deming way. That means everything was according to spec. If it wasn't a spec, it wasn't what you wanted to make. And they started producing quality stuff. We taught them. They started importing quality stuff here, and people stopped buying American, stopped buying overseas. Well, did you want to stop buying overseas because it's not made here? Absolutely not. We bought Japanese because it was quality merchandise. It lasted. You bought it, and it after a year, it was still running. Remember the first Honda Civic? Boy, that thing went forever. I mean, people loved it. It was a great selling car. It was a fabulous car. It's a cult car now, you know, and it's still considered one of the best cars ever produced. But back then, our cars, hey, after 40,000, junk, you know, and that's what happened. So, but during this time that we were manufacturing junk, because no one else was manufacturing, and we were exporting all over the world, we were making tons of money. And because we made tons of money, we demanded high wages. I mean, so it got to a point where a person working, and let me pick on the automobile industry because it's an easy one to pick on. I'll be honest with you, I'm going to be easy. I'm going to take an easy one. You take the automotive industry. You have a person with unskilled or semi-skilled job or function in an auto plant. And the person is making $45, $55, whatever it is. I heard some of them make $75 an hour. Plus you give them full medical, lavish vacation, a whole ball of wax. I mean, this guy with salary and burden, I think they would make like $75 an hour. Now, if you look at the world and say, how much does an unskilled person or semi-skilled, I mean, they're not highly skilled, that means they just learn to do something and they do it, right? Around the world, what does that job pay around the world? Well, around the world, it wasn't paying much. In fact, in some places, it was paying 50 cents an hour, a dollar an hour, $2 an hour, Germany, maybe $5 an hour. But we were paying $45 an hour. And so we still produce crap real expensively, right? Then when stuff came overseas that was cheaper, you know, we said, we demanded that we wanted to keep jobs. But wait a minute. That's what is seen. What is unseen is all of the jobs, you know, of the crap that we had to buy, you know, that we had to maintain, money that took out of our pockets to buy other things to enrich our lives, to increase our standard of living, and it decreased our standard of living. So we started to dump U.S. cars, and we started to buy Japanese cars because they were less expensive, and the suckers ran. I remember I had a Toyota Tercel. I used to call it my toy. Fabulous little car. I have a Subaru, folks. 1996 Subaru. It is so tight. It runs like it's a new car. I had a transmission work done it about 2 years ago. The mechanic called me and wanted to know if this was a new transmission. I said, no, never changed anything. It's a manual transmission, 5-speed. And he said, I want you to know it's as tight as it was the day it was built. Now, you know Subaru owners are fanatics. I mean, I still get stopped and say, how do you like your Subaru? It has over 253,000 miles on it, running strong. I can't sell the car. I love it. It's a Impreza Outback. It does everything. Now, does it have GPS on the dashboard and crap light and heated seats? No. But it works beautifully, always starts, always gets me there, never has broken down. Now, would I buy another Subaru? Hell yes, I would. Would I buy a Chevy? No, I wouldn't buy a Chevy. I wouldn't buy a Ford. I'd buy a Subaru. That's the way it is. Because that Subaru has saved me so much money. And as a result of saving money, remember the unseen, is the stuff that, because I had extra money in my pocket, and I'd have to go out and buy a new car because it dropped dead after 100,000 or 150,000 miles, I still have it. All the money that I saved, I purchased other things, many of which were produced in the United States. But yet, I bought a foreign car. That should have been bad for our economy. But in fact, that purchase was good for our economy. Because remember, money is a finite resource. It's a finite resource, and there's only so much of it. And after it, it's gone. And today, money is becoming more and more scarce. So what we want to do is we want to preserve as much money. We want to spend money on the things that increase our standard of living. That's what we need to do, right? And not just create jobs. My favorite story is the one Milton Friedman talks about. Milton Friedman was a great Austrian School of Economics economist. I mean, the most famous economist in modern history in the world. He went to China. And we're always talking about, you know, jobs. We should do it this way to save jobs, you know. Well, Franklin Delano Roosevelt actually said if it was up to him, he'd have thousands of people dig a trench from New York to California, and then he would pay the same group of people to go all the way back and fill it in because to create jobs. That's the Keynesian School of Economics, not the Austrian School of Economics. Very different, all right? And so he was, Milton Friedman was in Japan. I'm sorry, in China. And he had his guide with him, his interpreter. And he went to a large construction site in which there was a multitude of workers all digging with shovels. Now, this wasn't long ago. This was a few years ago before he had passed away. And he turned to the interpreter and said, "You have some of those modern earth-moving equipment in the world. Probably one of those big dozers can do the work of all of these people in a fraction of the time. Why are they out there?" He says, "So that we can preserve jobs." He says, "If we use a bulldozer, these people would be without a job." He said, "But what's your objective? Is to construct this stuff, you know, to construct this building or to make jobs?" Well, the guy couldn't answer. He said, obviously, it was not to create jobs. It was to build a building. He said, "Well, if it is, the objective is to create jobs, give them all spoons." Think of that, folks. Give them all spoons. Basically, don't give them a big shovel. Give them a small shovel. And if you don't, you think spoons are silly, give them a smaller shovel and hire twice the number of people. And that'll make you realize how ridiculous it is to preserve jobs. It's not the jobs. It's increasing our standard of living through innovation, initiative, and productivity. And we improve our standard of living. And when we improve our standard of living, jobs are the benefit of all that. And there's nothing unseen. There's no other side of the coin that hurts. Now, there may be people who maybe have to go out of business because they're doing things ineffectively, but they should go out of business and they should become more productive, or they should go into different business and become productive. Folks, I didn't cover hardly much of what I wanted to cover, one of which was the minimum wage. And I just want to say, the minimum wage is the scourge of productivity. But we'll talk about that some other time. What I'd like to do now is, let's see, where are we? Well, we have now, we just have about another minute to go. We do not have any more callers. We have 1 minute remaining. So this is about the end of the broadcast. I hope all this worked very well. Okay, this is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranchakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.